Good morning. Welcome to day four. I just get too excited. clearly, this is not exciting for me at all. So today we're going to move to JavaScript and cross-site scripting, and more than just that, but it's going to focus on a little bit of the client-side pieces of this. So really, it is, in some respects, you could say that the whole day is JavaScript and cross-site scripting. Yes, we will do more than just this, because in some respects, you could suggest that cross-site scripting is really just a particular case of HTML injection, right? So we will kind of roll HTML injection in here as well. We will also be dealing with Ajax and JSON injection here. So some fun stuff going on. First up, though, we've got a bit of a primer on JavaScript, and I am going to go through this pretty darn rapidly because this is meant to be, in some respects, just a little bit of a primer for those that don't have much exposure to JavaScript at all. JavaScript and an exposure to JavaScript is, I would say, a precondition for understanding and being somewhat successful with cross-site scripting, right? You got to have at least some exposure to JavaScript, and that's the reason for this. That's the main reason for this. But also, I would submit that, wow, JavaScript rules the freaking world, right? JavaScript is ubiquitous. It is everywhere. And it's used by pretty much every application in the known universe. So, you know, a little bit of facility, a little bit of exposure to JavaScript goes a long way. But most important for our purposes is the ability to write a little bit of JavaScript, read a little bit of JavaScript, understand it with respect to cross-site scripting. That's going to be key for us. So JavaScript is a client-side scripting language. Most people that are not deep into web apps, they think, meh, JavaScript, oh, that's just some wussy little language. Oh my gosh, no. JavaScript is incredibly important to just every application, it seems like, today. JavaScript is wildly popular, hugely important, and crazy powerful. There are entire operating systems written in JavaScript, right? Entire operating systems that can run within the confines of a browser just via JavaScript. Think of any significant application that you interface with nowadays, and it seems like JavaScript is near and dear to the heart of that application. It's crazy, crazy powerful. Hugely popular, and has nothing whatsoever to do with Java, right? So just to be clear, JavaScript's use in web pages. This is supported by all browsers, and this is one of the reasons that JavaScript is so popular, is that it's natively supported by all browsers. So unlike old school ActiveX, yay, that only worked on one particular browser, right? Unlike Flash, unlike Swift's and Flash, that requires you to have a special interpreter that's hooked into that browser, that's supported on that operating system, that's supported, right? I mean, we've all been burned by not having a Flash player in a browser, not having a Flash player on a device, and trying to hit that content. That's frustrating. That's annoying. JavaScript is pretty darn near universal, right? Unless you're like trying to use links to browse the world, then you've got JavaScript support. And it's just built into everything. Any rendering engine will have to have JavaScript in order to be successful. So that's the beauty of it, is that it's universally supported, and it can be dropped in and written in line within HTML. So it's not something just totally separate and distinct. It integrates just deeply with HTML, and can have access and kind of direct and obvious access to what's referred to as your DOM. So where do we see this? Well, we can see this most directly in HTML as script tags. So angle, script, angle, alert, you know, this little pop-up box that we'll see as our proof of concept. But we can also have JavaScript, and we can have JavaScript scripts that are in line. We can also have JavaScript as something that's just called as part of another element. Right, so we can have it be called by the event handlers. We can have it, you know, be associated with pretty much any tag, it seems, because now HTML5 any tag, every tag can have event handlers, which means every tag, right? I'd like to onload the P tag, right? Really? That's just kind of weird. But, you know, once that P tag loads up, then let's, what? Why would you do that? On mouse over for this guy, yeah. So all tags get all event handlers effectively, which means that they could cause JavaScript to run. We can also have, and this is very important for more significant cross-scripting exploitation, we can also use it to, we can have JavaScript loaded externally. And we'll talk about the impact or lack of impact that same origin policy has on this. So we've got conditionals, right? So this is more primer stuff. We've got conditionals. Hey, if this is true, do this. It is a case-sensitive language. We have blocks delimited by curly braces. We've got comments, you know, whack, whack for a single-line comment, whack, splat, splat, whack for a multi-line comment. Those can be useful, and we'll see that as part of a lab late in today's material when we're doing JSON injection. We'll see some commenting that can help us. We do have the ability to do conditionals. We've got if-then statements. We've got if-then-else. We've also got a case or switch statement. So you can predefine multiple cases and just flow down through them, right? We've got looping mechanisms with while loops and for loops. You know, nothing terribly surprising here. Again, just more so primer than anything. Exposure to, you know, what this code might look like. Variables are referred to as loosely typed. We also have, we can assign variables without them having been declared prior. So you don't have to say, hi, this is Bob. He's a variable that's going to contain a string, right? And then give it a value later. We can just immediately say, hey, this is Bob, slap it a value. JavaScript will go, yeah, I'll figure out what that is. It's totally cool. So you don't have to define what type of variable it is. We have JavaScript functions, which can kick off blocks of code. So you do have to, of course, define the function before you actually kick it off. Now, this is more important to us and not just for writing JavaScript, right? The event handlers. The event handlers with respect to HTML and web pages. Probably the first one that many of us remember. Do you remember when on mouse over was all the rage? Yeah? When people figured out these little event handler things, and then suddenly your mouse would move over something on a page and it would pop up and you're like, oh, right. Oh my gosh. Yeah. The blink tag was also awesome at one point in our existence, but no longer. But these event handlers are crazy important. On load. Yeah, once something loads up, then take an action. On unload, you're trying to leave? You're trying to leave my page? Oh no, don't leave. Here's a pop-up. Are you sure that you want to leave? Yeah. Oh, that's just, I want to throat punch whoever decided that was a good idea. But lots of stuff. On click, on submit, on focus, on blur, on mouse. Yeah, these are all these different event handlers. And these event handlers can be associated with any HTML tag. So you can slap these on anything, even if they don't really seem to make sense. And those event handlers can then be used to call JavaScript. So let's think about how we could use this for nefarious purposes. So how about an onload tag? Right. So we inject, imagine that we can control the JavaScript. So we've got some way of controlling what's written to the page, via cross-site scripting, via HTML injection, via it's just our page. And we inject an onload handler, right? Onload event, and once that tag whatever loads, then we change the content. So the content still looks good, but on the client side, the JavaScript takes that content and says, "Oh no, here's something different," right? So it's coming from the good domain, right? Coming from the good domain, but it's client side's view when it renders. We've now changed it. Okay, so they look at the source code on their end, they say, no, we're not putting porn on our pages. That's so weird, right? But then you've got a little onload event handler that says, ha-ha, take that. Yeah. Okay, that's sadly the first thing that came to my mind, someone defacing you with, like, making your app, like, throw up some porn or something. Okay, that was the first incident that I ever responded to, right? The first like hardcore incident response, I was a mere employee. I was pretty green and I was like geeked to the core, right? Some things change a lot. First incident ever responding to, it was SSH brute force attack against public-facing DNS infrastructure that had not been updated ever, right? So like these appliances just been like kicking it out there for like a gazillion years. And I realized that this is occurring and it's gonna be successful. That's just all there is to it, right? I'm the only one there, and I'm the person in the security department at an organization that should not have been the case. But I'm the only person. I'm the everything person when it comes to security. And so they didn't have like security, you know, security relevant management or anything like that. My boss was actually out of town, ironically, on CISSP training, right? Ironically, yeah. And I'm having to deal with this incident. And I'm kind of newish, and I don't know anything about politics. Let's just say I'm a geek. Yeah, I don't, this whole interpersonal relationship stuff, we'll just say not my strong suit. So, boss sitting there. There's an incident. I'm like, that's gonna suck, right? That's my thought. And so I explain, hey, by the way, of course it's Friday afternoon. Hey, by the way, we got an incident going on, right? There's an attack, and yeah, it's going to be successful. Might have already been successful. Once they realize it, it's, you know, it's going to be bad, right? They're like, what? What's going on? Oh yeah, yeah. We need everybody to come back. We got some incident response to do. We need to, you know, figure out what incident response even means at this point, right? And so they're all freaking out and saying, well, what's going to happen? What can be the impact? I'm like, I mean, well, if they take control of our DNS infrastructure, then, you know, they can change what we point to, right? Somebody tries to hit our page, they can go somewhere else. Like, wait, I don't know. Okay, look. So somebody tries to hit our company page, and instead of that, they can see porn. And I say this to the COO of the company, who's on conference with the CEO. And this is a household name organization that I'm working with at this point. And we'll just say, I don't think they had ever heard that word in business context before, perhaps, yeah? So I will say it did have at least a partially desired effect of it was taken seriously, right? We'll say that. but we had a very valuable team meeting, right? Me and the boss, right? When they came back, we had a very valuable team meeting on how not to talk to the higher ups in the organization, right? And I believe there was a forever ban on me saying the word porn to anyone in the company, right? So we had a lot of back and forth discussion. Now, what if someone's actually surfing? Just shut up, Seth. Just shut up, okay? It was good times. So the power of event handlers, people, right? You too could have that conversation. On unload, somebody's trying to get away. You have got their browser. They're trying to leave you. No, please don't go. Please. I still want to hack you more. That's on unload. Scary one. This is fun. On submit. You know, like you're submitting post data. I don't know, maybe slapping some credentials in a form. Hey, you being the hardcore paranoid security professional, you check the action on the form. You say, it's going HTTPS, trusted domain. Yeah, I'm so glad I checked. Oh yeah, you did, except when you click it, on submit, I say, oh, see your action? Change your action. Now it sends your credentials to my site. Oh, that's just mean, yeah? So these things are incredibly powerful, right? And we can use them in lots of nefarious ways. And there's more and more and more. And we'll see and directly experience some of these. So what's the most common thing that you think of when you think of cross-site scripting and JavaScript? Theft of what? Cookies. Well, how the heck does JavaScript have access to the cookies? That seems like that's something separate and distinct. It's through JavaScript being able to interface with the DOM. The DOM is the document object model. It's effectively how we deal with respect to markup, like how you parse the markup that is HTML and pages. It's how we build this out so that a browser can render it and knows how to render it. So, you know, it's got this tree structure, splits up, puts tags where they're supposed to go, subtags, child tags, things like that. And it allows for interaction. It's an object, right? The document object model. It's really collections of objects. And we can interface with this. And we've got DOM properties and DOM methods, okay? So, for instance, we've got, and you might have seen some of these before, like document.cookie is a big one, right? JavaScript can interface with these, and we can start going and saying, hey, can you show me document.form0? Well, that's an array. That's the first form on the page. I don't even have to know its name because this is abstract. Document.forms. You got some forms on there? I don't know. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But that's the first one if you do. Right? The second one would be document.forms1. Right? So, you know, I could interact with forms, and then I could see what their names are, I could see what the data is, what the values are, and I could read them potentially. Right? I could also change them. That's how I could do that on click or on submit, make changes to the forms. I could go find the form, change the action on the form to point to me. Right? So it's through interfacing with the DOM that we can do a lot of grabbing data from the page itself, of writing data. And this is how we're going to ultimately end up doing things like stealing cookies, by and large, is through interfacing with something like document.cookie, right? Or we can interface with even method calls and say, you know, document.location. Document.location, where are we? Where are we going? We can change the location. We can read the location. We can send them somewhere else. We can do a window.alert and do a pop-up box, right? And this is all associated with these the DOM model. So some that could be of interest, I'm not going to read these to you. Document.cookie is the most important one for the purposes of today. You also see we will make references to things like document.location. We'll be hitting that one as well. So I said, hey, we can change the action on the form, change where it points. Let's look at a method of doing something like this. So scripts can walk, quote unquote, the tree. So we're trying to find forms, for instance. Function count tags, right? Get elements by tag name, yeah, so document, and then we're passing a method, tag, and figuring out how many we've got. Going through and, you know, reading attributes, figuring out the value. Here's the one that I was most interested in. We're hitting the my form, right? So form name my form, and we're changing the action, and the action is now equal to evil site. Ooh, yeah. So, you know, lots of different opportunities for interfacing with this. And JavaScript, of course, can do all of this because JavaScript is crazy powerful, right? That's why it's used so heavily by applications. Where it gets interesting for us is our ability to get JavaScript running on a page that we are not supposed to be in control of, right? And that's really what cross-site scripting is going to do for us. It's going to allow us to inject JavaScript into a page so that we can make changes to the way that the page works. So interacting with cookies, document.cookie, that's as straightforward as it gets. We can set the cookie, that's what we're doing here. We can also take document.cookie and we can have the browser send that document.cookie over to us. And we'll be doing that as a method of stealing the cookies. So you've got a simple little intro exercise to JavaScript, which, you know, if you've got any experience with web pages and JavaScript, it's, you know, probably unnecessary. But if you don't, play around a little bit with JavaScript. It's just getting you some familiarity with writing a little bit of script, very basic stuff, making changes to using some event handlers. Also, you'll see the use of an external script source, right, which is going to be a building block that we really, really use later, especially when we get to crazy browser exploitation through cross-site scripting. All right? So dig into this exercise. You're going to be just building some files locally on your box, and you're just going to be looking at them. You're not going to be interacting with proper, honest-to-goodness web pages at this point. You're just going to be, you're writing the source code for the page, you're writing a little attack.js file, and then you're looking at them, right? So you're opening them up in your browser and seeing how they interact with. Okay? So we've got the JavaScript folder on the desktop, and then we've got some. We're going to use index.html file, and then you're also going to reference an attack.js file. I believe that's the name of it. Okay. So, all right. Play with JavaScript. Again, if you've got some exposure to web apps, or some exposure to web pages, even not even apps, and or JavaScript, then this will be a quick, easy one for you, or one that you can just skip. All right. All right. So let's now dig in. You've done your JavaScript. You've had a little bit of nudge into JavaScript. Maybe you did the JavaScript exercise. Let's look at why we first expose you to JavaScript, and that's really cross-site scripting. So cross-site scripting is it an input flaw? I guess you could characterize it an input flaw. You can also characterize it though as an output flaw, which is kind of odd that it's both input and output, because this flaw can be addressed really in either way, either on the input side of the equation or on the output side of the equation. Now, me personally, I really wish that the original name or one of the original names for this flaw would have stuck, because I think it's easier to understand than cross-site scripting. And that's script injection. So that's one of the old school names that was used for this, script injection. See, to me, that's a little easier to kind of visualize what's going on. You have a bad guy, injecting a script in such a way that it renders on the user's screen, right? So one thing that's challenging, particularly challenging about cross-site scripting, is that it's the application generally that has the flaw, but it's the user, at least most directly, that is the victim. And that's kind of unfortunate, because given how hard it is to get folks to fix flaws, you say, oh my gosh, you've got this really big flaw. It's not the easiest one for you to fix. It's not as easy as SQL injection to fix, but you need to fix it because it's going to cause impact on your users. Right. So we'll get right on that. Sure. Yeah, that's going to be the highest priority. You mean, so we've got a flaw that makes it so our users are going to get hurt, maybe, but they're not necessarily going to know that it was us that, okay. I'll jump right on that. This is hard to get folks to prioritize. It's hard to get folks to fix these flaws. It's not very easy to fix these flaws, right? These are harder to fix flaws than something like a SQL injection or OS command injection generally. cross-site scripting is considered to be the single most common vulnerability. Not web app vulnerability, it's the single most prevalent vulnerability writ large. They are all over the place. Extremely common. Now, you think it's hard to get someone to care about a public-facing cross-site scripting flaw? Just try to get them to care about an internal cross-site scripting flaw. And yet those can be absolutely insidious and can really, really damage your applications and damage your organization. But again, extremely difficult to get traction with these. And I think sometimes we are to blame, the testers. And I'll explain why here shortly, okay? But I do think that we bear some of the responsibility for why this is so prevalent and why it doesn't seem to get fixed. I think we bear a little bit of the responsibility, not all of it, certainly, but we'll see how we can change our ways a bit. So again, script injection. Now, we got a graphic here. We see the adversary with his black hat and pirate screen, yeah. We got the adversary. We just left it simple web server. Let's just keep it there. And we've got browser. Now, the adversary is somehow injecting a script in such a way that the browser executes the script, renders this script. Now, this can happen in different ways. We generally say, for the most part, that the web application has a flaw that allows the adversary to inject this script into the stream. Now, how it gets injected, when it gets injected, can vary, and that presents to us different classes of cross-site scripting. Before we go further, though, we got to take a little bit of a step back and talk about SOP, same origin policy. Same origin policy tries to help protect us when we are allowing code, when we are rendering code from people that we might not trust completely. So you've got the lovely, lovely browser. Browser going out, hitting sites, hitting apps, and rendering code. Well, do you know for certain that that code is trustworthy? Do you know for certain that that site is trustworthy? Not especially. And we also absolutely, we interface with sites that we have different trust for. Does everybody appreciate that? Like, you got one tab kicking it at your bank, you got another tab just kicking it at some fly-by-night, you know, you absolutely don't think that the level of security is great, is equal on all sites. I think that's a fair statement, yeah? There's differing levels of security, you would expect, and there's different levels of trust that you put into those. And yet, the overwhelming majority of us use the exact same code, the exact same browser, the exact same security configuration to hit all of them. Now, the reason same origin policy exists is because early on, people got a little freaked out and said, hey, wait a second. If we're going to do more than just have that nice little static site, gray background, black text, some of which is blue that turns purple, right? If we're going to do more than that, we're going to do more than static sites, and we're going to actually allow proper code, dynamic code to run, mobile code to run, then we got to do something about this whole security issue because we have various trust levels, but we can't really attend to that properly. So you go hit that high trust application or that sensitive application. You go hit your online bank. Okay? Go hit your online bank. They've got scripts. These scripts run. Right? They have to have scripts associated with running this application. It's part of it. Another tab opens up, right? You open up another tab, you hit some, well, let's just say less trustworthy site, sketchier site perhaps. They also have scripts. Your browser says, hey, give me your scripts, run them. Now, where same origin policy comes into play is, let's imagine that you have those two tabs, and we saw a little bit of shared memory action, right, with our authorization. Remember, they're not as process isolated as we would like to be, would be led to believe. So you got a tab kicking it at your bank. You got a tab kicking it at sketchy site. Bank's sending you down some data. Bank, of course, is sending you down authorization cookies. You've authenticated. You're feeling good about this. They send you a cookie. You have to send this cookie back. You now hit sketchy site. Sketchy site sends down some script. Now, sketchy site is all about wanting your bank. So they say, hey, I got this script, you're loading it up in your browser, I would like to access the cookies that the bank set. Same origin policy says, And that's really the big major protection that we want to get from same origin policy, is that if you hit an origin server, you hit your bank, they send something down. They have a DOM, right? There's all those forms and actions and cookies and everything associated with you rendering their pages and you submitting requests. They are the only ones that can interface with that content. So you can run scripts in these other confines, and those scripts are not allowed to access content that was sent from a different origin server. This is the reason that we require the cross, right, the cross-site in cross-site scripting, is because of same origin policy. If we didn't have same origin policy, then all I would have to do is get you to render my site, and my script would say, steal all the cookies, right? But because of same origin policy, I have to figure out a way of injecting my JavaScript so that your browser believes that the bank sent it to you. Why? Because that script that I've injected has access to the DOM associated with that origin server. That's the only way that my script can actually see those cookies. I can get you to run JavaScript all day long, but unless I can get you to run JavaScript that's sent from within that context, then it's not going to have access to all that data. Does that make sense? Now, how do you verify same origin policy? It has to match on the host, on the port, and on the protocol. It's pretty straightforward. Host, port, protocol. So this is what gets checked. Oh, who checks, who enforces same origin policy? Where is that enforced? The browser, right? The browser is what's responsible for enforcing same origin policy. So the browser checks and says, you know, it's looking at code. You know, you've launched a script that's trying to interact with something else, trying to interact with your cookies. It's going to check it and say, hey, does the same host port protocol, right? Does this match the origin server associated with that content? If it doesn't, then it can't access it. Okay, so here we see, we've got an evil server, right? Evil server sends a script, right? You've got this separate connection to the bank server. Well, the evil server's scripts can't access bank content because that would violate same origin policy. So just a quick heads up on SOP. Here's our origin, right? Your browser reaches out and grabs something from http://www.sec542.org/about/info.php. So there it is. That's the URL. And then we're testing these URLs in the chart and saying, hey, does this count? Would this be allowed under SOP? So first, let's look at protocol. That's the easiest one. So HTTP is the protocol. So HTTPS, right? So this fourth one down is HTTPS. That's a different protocol, so not the same origin. Okay. How about next, we look at port. Well, what's the port involved in this first one? That's 80. It's 80, right? Because we don't have to specify the port. So let's look for a port being explicitly specified. All good. There we go, different port, 8181. sec542.org:8181. So different port. So that fails same origin policy. Okay, well now let's look at the host. What's the host? www.sec542.org. It's not the domain, it's the host. So, www.sec542.org. Same host. Then we got this next to last one, web. Web's not the same as www, so that fails. The one that gives people grief, though, is the very last one. Because we just pretend that sec542.org and www.sec542.org are the exact same thing. From SOP, they are not, right? So that's not the same host. It's not implied, it's explicit. If you connect to an IP address only, would that count as the same origin? What do you think? No. No, it wouldn't count as the same origin because it doesn't match its host, and it doesn't do the reverse lookup or anything like that with respect to determining that. Okay. If you just do it by IP address, then you'd see in your HTTP headers that the host is actually the IP as opposed to the domain name, right? The actual full name. So it's whatever's in the host header, effectively. That's the way I would characterize it. All right, now, there are tweaks on this because many applications say, this is too restrictive. This gets in the way of what we want to do. This gets in the way of what we need to do. And so there's all sorts of intentional ways of getting around the restrictions of same origin policy. So CORS is a common one, right? Common object resource sharing. CORS is one way of trying to attend to this. And there are others, and we'll talk about some of these others. The one that gives people, well, we'll see that later, okay? We'll talk about one that people just kind of, they scratch their head and look at it and say, hey, wait a second, that should violate same origin policy, and we use this every day in cross-site scripting attack. There's a particular example. Well, I'll just go ahead and say it. I don't want to set it up that much and then say,
Ha-ha, you will learn later.
No. The one that's particularly challenging for people to make sense of is, what if in a web page I say script source equals? Script source equals sesevildomain.com. Your bank just sent you down this page, and it says script source equal sesevildomain.com. And there's some JavaScript there, right? sesevildomain.com/attack.js. Is that in the same origin? Sure doesn't seem like it should be, but it is. Because the origin server told you to go load this, and it's as if you went out, grabbed that JavaScript, and then put all of that inside of the page that was sent. That's the way that it's treated from a same origin policy perspective. But that seems really weird, doesn't it? Right? Because you're going and fetching the script from somewhere else. But it's because it was told to you from that origin server, and it's just hosted elsewhere. But it's effectively, it feels like a stand-in or a variable, right? Replace whatever you see here in the script source equals with the entirety of those lines of code.
Is that along the same lines of why it doesn't line when a page calls
The images from other sites, they won't necessarily cause problems. You can render content from many, many, many different origin servers. It's just, what can you do? What can you interact with directly, right? So, you know, can you access items that are referenced in the DOM, right? And they would have separate DOMs for separate origin servers effectively, right? That's what it would kind of feel like. I don't know which one's first. Go for it.
Does IE still use all three? Because I was left to understand that IE doesn't take protocol into consideration, host and port only.
So I'll just paraphrase it. There's nuance here because it's the job of the browser to enforce this. So there's nuance here, and there's different types of SOP bypass attacks, and there's different ways of enforcing SOP. So there's also just edge cases where, oh yeah, it should apply, but we've changed it so it doesn't apply in these cases. And we've seen this for a while now, where because more and more applications are saying, you know what, this is too restrictive. So if we're doing this and it's coming from the same overall domain, or if we're doing this, or if we explicitly set the origin server to be the domain, then does that change it? Right, so we've done lots of different things to try to tweak the way this works. But we're gonna keep it simple here and just keep it straightforward, because I want you to have a basic understanding of it and not get caught up on the edge cases. But yeah, IE played differently with it, right? sorry, yes?
Well, I was going to say, so obviously you're bringing in content from elsewhere, but as a developer, you look at it and say, well, that of course enables us to do all this shared Node.js.
Oh, yeah.
Google code.
Oh, yeah.
All these DBMs.
Right? Yep. Yeah, no, we absolutely use this, and it's intentional, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's just being cognizant of it. So, I mean, we do APIs all the time. We do script frameworks, right? You use third party jQuery, hosted jQuery, CDN hosted jQuery, right? You're not using the code from your own server. You're actually going and reaching out and grabbing jQuery from, and maybe even the latest and greatest jQuery, and then using that directly, right? From a third party hosted standpoint. And that's like, I mean, that's nuts and bolts of your entire application, right? I mean, that's got some crazy, and that's totally externally hosted, but it's being referenced from your page called script source. So there's a lot of, and I'm not trying to make it sound like there's illegitimate, right? There's a lot of very legitimate use cases where this does get in the way, and we need to move around it. You also see that different types of code will use their own interpretation. So like Java SOP and Flash SOP, the way that they do that is different, right? Flash doesn't really do SOP in the same way. They do cross-domain, right? The cross-domain.xml. So there's lots of tweaks and variations upon the theme. This is straight up just the basic approach to SOP, but worth noting about the script source. Because a lot of folks, if they aren't used to this, they expect that that's a SOP violation, and it's not. So, cool. We good? All right. One of the reasons that I say that we bear some of the responsibility for people not fixing these flaws is on the screen right now. Ping! Yeah, did you hear that pop-up box? Yeah? Oh my gosh, that's scary, isn't it? A pop-up box. Yeah, so if you're doing a pen test and you slap into a report and you put a pretty picture of a pop-up box, do you think that anyone cares? Because I know and you know that pop-up is proof of concept. It's proof of concept that we can get JavaScript to do something. So the basic little visible test is we throw in a little alert dialog. Ping, pop-up box. Oh, okay. Well, that for us is a proof of concept test. That's fine. It's not fine when you slap it into a report and expect people to know what the hell the impact is. Because they say, oh no, please don't pop up an alert box that I can click OK in. Yeah, never mind, I don't care. I don't care at all. I'll just click OK and it'll be fine.